Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 143 for May 4th, 2008. Coming up in a few minutes.
We're finally bringing this onto the marketplace after 109 years. It must be one of the longest pregnancies in history, but the baby's born.
That's Alistair Longwell, the master distiller at Ardmore Distillery in Aberdeenshire. It took more than a century, but Ardmore's single malt is finally available. More with Alistair later, but first, let's look at the news. The Spirit of Speyside Festival is wrapping up this weekend, and the winners of the Spirit of Speyside Whiskey Awards have been announced. The Balvenie 10-Year-Old Founders Reserve won for Best Single Malt 12 years and younger. The Glenlivet Nadura won for malts between 13 and 20 years old. And the Balvenie 21-Year-Old Portwood won for Best Single Malt 21 years or older. If you're a longtime listener of Whiskey Cast, I know what you may be thinking. Didn't the Balvenie stop making the Founders Reserve a couple of years ago? Way back in episode 18 from February 2006, Balvenie's then global brand manager Jens Tholstrup told us that in order to make more whiskey available for older expressions, distribution of the Founders Reserve 10-year-old would be cut back. While it's not as widely available as it used to be, it is still sold in the U.S. and several European markets. And as I said back in episode 18, it was the first single malt I ever bought a bottle of. Back to the Spirit of Speyside Festival for a moment. Glen Grant opened its new visitor center just in time for the festival. Campari bought Glen Grant in 2006 and has invested about $1 million converting the distillery's old coach house and stables. The old visitor center will be turned into a coffee shop. I've sung the praises of John Hall's 40 Creek Canadian whiskey for a couple of years now, and John has a new version coming out later this year. John Hansel of Malt Advocate magazine broke the news late this past week in his blog. He reports John Hall is working with what will be called a double barrel reserve version of 40 Creek. I'll be talking with John this coming weekend at the Spirit of Toronto Festival, and I'll have more details on the next episode of Whiskey Cast from Toronto. Last month, we heard the latest from Ewan Shand of Duncan Taylor on the distillery he's hoping to build in his hometown of Huntley. Ewan says he's now received all the permits he needs to begin construction, and when I talked with him in April, he still hadn't come up yet with a name for the whiskies he plans to produce. Well, he has now. His whiskies will be bottled as the Huntley, and he's planning to produce both single malt and single grain whiskies. I'll keep you posted as more details are available. Scotch distillers set a new record for exports last year. The Scotch Whiskey Association reports exports grew by 14% for a value of £2.8 billion, or about $5.6 billion. The biggest growth came in Europe, where exports rose 27%, while North American exports rose by 5.5%. Among individual countries, the SWA reports the slashing of whiskey import tariffs in India led to a 36% rise in exports to that country alone. Exports to South Africa rose 9%, while exports to Singapore rose 84%. But to be fair, most of the whiskey shipped to Singapore is then sent on to other countries. Finally, a sad story to report. Last Wednesday night, a truck carrying casks of whiskey between two Chivas Brothers facilities rolled over on the Clydeside Expressway in Glasgow. The driver is all right, but firefighters needed several hours to clean up the spilled whiskey. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. As I mentioned earlier, I'll be in Toronto this coming weekend for the Spirit of Toronto Festival on Saturday the 10th. The Glenlivet City Links Tour hits Seattle from May 13th through the 23rd. Whiskey and All That is May 17th in Ayres, Scotland, and the Keeler Whiskey Fair is the weekend of May 17th and 18th in Kiel, Germany. The London International Wine and Spirits Fair is May 20th through the 22nd, and John Glazer of Compass Box will hold a tasting at Milroy's of Soho in London on May 21st. Finally, the Isla Festival of Malt and Music, Fays Eel, starts May 24th and runs through June 1st all over the island. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the Whiskey Cast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask. Become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla at laphroaig.com. Most of the whiskey produced at Scotland's distilleries never gets bottled as a single malt, and at some distilleries, the entire output goes straight to the blenders. Until the last year or so, that was the case at Ardmore Distillery in Aberdeenshire, which was built back in 1898 to produce malt whiskey for teachers. It's had several owners over the years, but Beam Global acquired it along with Laphroaig several years ago as part of the Allied Domecq breakup. Ardmore Traditional has been available in duty-free shops for about a year now, and is now being released widely. Alistair Longwell is the distillery manager.
The teacher family, like most of the blending houses in the late 1880s, were looking for consistent malt supply. And that was really the golden era of distillery construction. You know, some 30 distilleries were constructed during the 1890s. The teacher family looked at the area where we are in Aberdeenshire, and they looked for basically three ideas, you know, three forms of location. You know, there was location for being close to water, they needed it somewhere close to a supply of barley, and they needed, you know, good communication links. And the distillery, where it's sited, is on actually the highest point of the Aberdeen to Inverness railway line. So at its own railway siding, all the coal required for the furnaces could come in, the empty casks could come in, full casks could go out. We are 600 feet up. The hill behind us is 1,500 feet, on which we have 14 natural springs. So all the water they required was coming to them naturally, and it's quite a verdant part of Aberdeenshire, so there was ample fields for growing the barley. The distillery had its own maltings right up until the mid-70s, 1974. So it really was all about location. They bought the land for £1,000, believe it or not, from the local landowner, Mr. Leif Hay. We still have quite a good relationship with the Leif Hall house. We use that for entertaining guests. And they started building in 1898. Unfortunately, William Teacher, who was the founder of the company, had long passed on. And it was his eldest son, Adam, who was the distiller and engineer. And he didn't quite make it through Hogmanay 1898. He didn't get past the bells. And he passed on, and the family really were at a bit of a loss because he was a man with the engineering and distilling experience. Fortunately, they had a relationship with Captain John Grant at Glendronach Distillery to the north of Huntly, we are to the south of Huntly, and they approached him, and he quite kindly sent over John Innes, his brewer. John finished building the distillery, commissioned it, we ran the first malt through our maltings in June 1999. We've got the original journals out in display at the distillery showing we were peating back then. There's no gimmick with our peating. He finished it and stayed as manager till 1923. And that was the start of the relationship with Glendronach Distillery that teachers enjoyed. And really the distillery has ran consistently since then. It doubled up production in the mid-50s from two stills to four stills, maintaining the coal firing aspect. And in the 70s, on the back of 1 million case sales alone in the UK, they doubled up the capacity again to its current eight stills, still keeping the coal firing. And she still is one of the largest distilleries in Scotland. We are currently making over 5 million litres of alcohol, most of it going towards teachers, but now, having given the go-ahead from our new owner, Jim Beam, we're finally bringing this onto the marketplace after 109 years. It must be one of the longest pregnancies in history, but the baby's born, and it's...
Now, it had been bottled as a single malt for special occasions at times, right?
Yeah, there's been two previous bottlings that we have. In the mid-70s, in the UK, there was an energy crisis around about 1974, and people were going on to a three-day week, and the distilleries were no different. And to commemorate this fact, Robert Dunlop, who was one of the directors at the time, came up, presented everybody a 15-year-old Ardmore, just for the employees, and promptly told them they were on a three-day week. So, beyond that, in 1899, the distillery centenary, there was a proprietary bottling done, limited, of 12-year-old and 21. And there was only really, you know, 250 cases of the 12-year-old, of which we have about 130 left. A very, very limited bottling. And it was a truly exquisite whiskey, which, as we were talking earlier on, Jim Murray rated it 94. And really, at that time, Jim was banging the drum for Ardmore and saying, come on, Allied, if this doesn't switch you on, nothing will. Unfortunately, it didn't switch them on, but Beam have been switched on.
What's taken place over the last couple of years to get ready for the debut of Ardmore Traditional?
Well, we were running at about 2.9 million litres. That was kind of steady for us. As soon as we became part of Beam and people realised that we had such a great spirit, we stepped up. We hired guys in from other distilleries, and we got ourselves up running, to the full maximum. We've also started laying down stock for the single malt. We didn't have any, or didn't have much maturing stock for single malts, and we're trying now to do different expressions. We've got a bit more flexibility now. We have a great team on board, both in Scotland. We have two distilleries, Laphroaig and Ardmore. We've got our master blender, Robert Hicks. We've got the guys at Laphroaig, boys at Ardmore, all keen as mustard to show the two great whiskies we have. And we've got gentlemen here like Simon spreading the word in the States. We really have a top team, and we're laying down plenty of stock for these guys to sell for us in the future.
Now, what other blends would someone find Ardmore in besides Teachers?
I couldn't say precisely what blends it would in, because obviously I'm not party to the recipes of the other firms, but we reciprocate Ardmore to every single one of the major and most of the smaller players. So, if there'll be somewhere in a Diageo blend, it'll be in the Chivas blends, it'll be in Edrington's blends, you name it, right across the whole way, we sell Ardmore or reciprocate Ardmore to everybody. And everybody thinks when they drank Teachers over the years, the richness of the flavour was coming from Islay malts, because, I can taste peat, it must be Islay. A lot of the other blends will be like Teachers, where you can smell that peat, it'll be Ardmore, it might not necessarily be from Islay or from Talisker.
Now, what gives Ardmore that peatiness and the special taste that it has? Because, as you say, it's peaty, but it's not an Islay peat, it's not an Orkney peat. What gives it the unique peatiness?
We draw our peat from the Newport Sligo and St Fergus Mosses. They're in northeast Aberdeenshire, about 30 miles from the distillery. The distillery's always drawn its peat. Even when we had our own Saladin maltings right up to the mid-70s, the peat was delivered from there. Now we use commercial maltsters, which are on the Murray coast, 15 miles from us, and they still draw from that source. That's one of the stipulations, that has to be the local Aberdeenshire peat. Myself and George, my assistant manager, went to visit the peat fields, peat mosses, last year, and the gentleman who's just about to retire, who owns the enterprise, was telling us a story of how he was coming into Ardmore just before the Second World War, when he was a little boy with his father unloading the peats. So, this is the same peat source we've always been used, and that's why we've got a consistent flavour. And the key thing about using Aberdeenshire peat is it's not a maritime peat like they have in Islay. It's peat that's been generated from the breakdown of heather mosses and the wildflowers therein. And it gives a sweeter, drier, earthier smoke. There's no salt or, people say the iodine medicinal flavours. And it gives you a completely different flavour. The smoke is more subtle.
And that's one of the misperceptions that a lot of people have about peated malts, is that there's a belief that peat is peat, and no matter where it comes from in Scotland, you're going to get the same taste, and that really isn't the case, is it?
Absolutely not. It's like anything else in this world. Barley isn't barley. There's different varieties, and wherever you grow it, you're going to get different flavours from it. It's the same as water. Water in areas of Speyside is different from the water we're using, which is different from the water they're using in the lowlands, different from the water they're using in the islands. And it's a common misconception, but it's one we're happy to put right for tasting Ardmore. I think people will really get a big surprise when they taste Ardmore, because it will blow away this myth of peat is peat is peat.
What's the future hold?
We think it's rosy. We've always known we've had a very good single malt. It's there, it's out now, and from what we've seen going round both the US and going round the UK and other places, as soon as the consumers taste Ardmore, they might be a bit wary because they've never heard of it before. As soon as they taste it, they switch on. People are coming alive to the full flavour. It's got a great mouthfeel, and it's got smoke. It's subtle smoke. So it's a nice balance of sweetness, smoke and spice. It's truly a three-dimensional whisky. A lot of whiskies are very good, but tend to be maybe one or two-dimensional and don't give the full range of flavours that we can offer.
Now, you've mentioned the partnership and the tie-in with Laphroaig through the common ownership. What's the difference between the two? Where would you rate them on the scale of, say, in the peat factor and the taste factor, so that someone who knows what a Laphroaig tastes like can identify what Ardmore is going to taste like?
Sure. Laphroaig is truly full-flavoured when it comes to peating. John and the boys peat there typically 40 to 45 parts per million. Ardmore, we're peating about 12 to 15, so we're about a third of the way through that. What you get through in the final spirit is about a third of what you put in your malt. So if you're putting in a malt at 45, you can expect a phenol in your spirit to about 15, and that's Laphroaig. We're putting in at 12 to 15, we've got a phenol level of about 4 and a finished Ardmore. So it's about a third of the strength. If you know your Laphroaig, then you can kind of gauge your way down there.
And you've been doing the same thing that Laphroaig has been doing with the quarter cask experiment. You've done some quarter cask work with this Ardmore Traditional, right?
Yes, it was an experiment that was started when both the distilleries were in the Allied stable. And the experiment was run after Laphroaig proved to be so successful. All the single malts we had in the stable were put into quarter casks. And it transpired that really the only spirits that could work with were the heavier phenolic spirits. It's just very lucky that Beams managed to acquire the two distilleries that it worked with, because it really is a wonderful process for adding in extra flavour and building on top of what is basically already a fulsome spirit. You can't use quarter cask on a light spirit, and especially not on a sweet spirit. You will over-egg the pudding, and it will just become the one and only flavours. But if you've got a strong, robust phenolic spirit, it's a wonderful method of taking some of the rough edges off and building in some added dimensions of sweetness and spice.
Without giving any secrets away, do you take the various ages and put them together before putting it in the quarter cask, or do you take them straight from their original casks, quarter cask them, and then vat them together?
No, we will vat first. What we're trying to do with traditional cask, as you notice, doesn't have an age statement. We're going for flavour profile that's going to be consistent. So consistent flavour rather than consistent age, which doesn't guarantee consistent flavour. So we will marry first, and then we can adjust. You know, we can add in some younger or some older, depending on what we find when we do the initial vatting, and only then will we finish in the quarter casks. That way, hopefully you'll guarantee that you come back here and we have a conversation in 2 years. We can sit down here, Mark, crack open a bottle, and it should taste just the way it's tasting tonight.
Until now, Ardmore has never had a visitor's center. It didn't really need one, since most people had never heard of it and had no reason to visit. I suspect that's about to change, and Alistair is hoping to get funding to build a visitor's center soon. You'll find a link to the Ardmore website at the WhiskeyCast website. Finally, a couple of emails from the past week. Mark Foner emailed asking how to become a Scotch taster and run Scotch tasting parties. Well, there's no simple answer to that question. Most whiskey producers have what are called brand ambassadors. In some cases, they've worked at a distillery and have been drafted over into the marketing side. And in other cases, they work for marketing companies that are hired by whiskey producers. If you have enough knowledge about whiskey, you can also talk with local adult education programs about teaching your own class on whiskey tasting. Kevin Stanton emailed with a question about the barrels that go from distilleries in Kentucky and Tennessee to Scotland after they've been used for bourbon and Tennessee whiskey. He wants to know whether the disassembled casks are kept together for reassembly in Scotland, or whether the distilleries there just get collections of random staves to build barrels. In this case, it all depends on the distillery. While the barrel pieces are all kept together for shipping to all distilleries, some distilleries reassemble the cask as is at their cooperage, and some will take 3 casks and use staves from one to make 2 larger ones. Kevin's follow-up was whether there's any impact on the taste of a Scotch if staves from more than one bourbon distillery are used. Generally not, since most Scotch distilleries have alliances with U.S. distilleries and source all of their barrels from the same distillery. Also, the length of time Scotch spends in a barrel would minimize any impact of a few staves from different distilleries. Thanks for the questions, guys. And if you have a whiskey question or a comment, please email me. The address is comments@whiskeycast.com, and I'll try to find an answer for you. You'll find links, the calendar of events, the WhiskeyCast store, and a complete archive of past episodes at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2008, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.